And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket.
Dave, this weekend we both attended a rally in Scranton, one of the series of nationwide rallies, I think in every big city and in lots of little cities, demanding an end to Trump's activities, or at least expressing disapproval of Trump's activities. In Scranton, I think we must have had anywhere up to 1,500 people, which for Scranton is an unusually large meeting.
It was definitely a large crowd, particularly given the weather was not good.
Right.
And it was an amalgam of people. There were a lot of homemade signs that had different expressions on them, but all of them expressing disapproval of what's happening in the country. The theme of the organizers was hands off. They had a number of speakers, as you know. They had a special guest speaker who didn't talk for very long, but made an appearance, and that was former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi.
She was there?
She was there. She was actually in town for a wedding. Her college roommate was Cecile Lynette Haggerty, the Lynettes that used to own the Scranton Times. And they remained very close over the years. Cecile died a couple years ago. Nancy had come in previously for a family wedding and had been there for Cecile's funeral. This time it was one of Cecile's grandchildren that was getting married. So she spoke, kept to the theme, and then they had a number of other speakers, the mayor of Scranton, Paige Cognetti, and County Commissioner Bill Gaughan, who gave, I guess you would call it a keynote address. It was a lot longer than anybody else. And
it was a very meaty speech. I came in at that point.
Yeah, he covered a lot of ground. It was a strong campaign speech type of thing, touched on a lot of bases. And there were a couple of other union people that spoke there. But the crowd was pretty activated, I would say. They were into it. They were constantly giving cheers out. And no one left. You know, during the rally, people just kept coming. As you know, we were huddled across the street from the county courthouse under the protection of the overhead of the federal courthouse. And that side of the street got filled up pretty well. So
it was a good crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they had good crowds all over the country.
Yep. Yep. There was a mixture. It wasn't just us older people. There were some younger couples. There were kids around. And as I said, the one thing that impressed me were all the homemade signs. The people were really thinking about things. So I'm not sure what the follow-up will be, but it I think is one of those things that tends to show that people are restless.
People are restless and people want to do something.
Yeah.
And I think that the Wisconsin vote certainly must have surprised the Republicans, the MAGA people. I mean, they couldn't. I can't imagine that they thought they would lose by 10 points.
Well, you know, it depends what world they were really living in. You know, Elon Musk was sort of the leader of that. And he's, let's face it, he's not exactly the a people person to understand things about that. He's a technocrat. And he had framed this as being a vote for the protection of Western civilization, that if the Democrat won, it would be the end of Western civilization. And of course, as soon as that was, the votes came in, he downplayed it. There were a couple of things that surprised me about that. Now, you know, a year or so ago, they had a vote for another Supreme Court justice in Wisconsin, and the Democrat again won by 11 points, which was a pretty big win. But in the interim, Donald Trump won the state, so there was question marks about, you know, what was going to happen. The polling I saw had the Democrat up between 5 and 8 points, but I think that at the end, you know, Musk put on a real thrust. He went to Wisconsin. He was giving away millions of dollars, literally, for people to come out and vote. He, you know, appeared at a rally at the end wearing a cheesehead hat. And, you know, if considering how much money he spent, you know, tens of millions of dollars, and 10-point victory, it was a pretty strong signal.
That's right.
In a swing state.
That's right.
So we had that. Now, also, by the way, there were two other votes, though, in Wisconsin that we shouldn't overlook. One was for the education commissioner, or whatever they call it there. And again, the more liberal won that, but not by as big a margin. I think she won by about 5 points, something like 53-47. And then they had a ballot measure, though, for voter ID. And that passed by a good 60-40 margin. So the people of Wisconsin were splitting their vote. And that voter ID thing is something that we have to be pretty mindful of, because it's been the way people look at it, they look at it as, why not? Why shouldn't you have voter ID? And they don't realize how secure the system of elections is in this country, and that there really is no fraud. And that voter ID is really a shorthand in most instances of suppressing the vote. There is out there a proposal in Congress. It's called the SAVE Act, which will do certain things in terms of voter ID, which is going to require voter ID. And of course, there's some real tricks in that, because one of the things is that you're going to have to come up with either a passport or a birth certificate, and your birth certificate name has to match the name on the voter registration.
Well, if you're a married woman, that can't happen.
That is correct. And so women don't understand that they could be disenfranchised. The other thing is, as you know, they have these real IDs that are acceptable, but they're harder to get. There's, you know, you have to have your social security card and some other identifications. And this really hurts the poor, because sometimes you're going to have to spend money to get these things, even to get your correct birth certificate. I heard something on the radio this weekend about the state of Maine, where who it would affect. It's going to affect the elderly. It's going to affect women. But the Secretary of State in Maine said it's also going to affect a lot of rural voters. She said something interesting. By the way, she's the first woman to hold that position, or she's the Attorney General. I can't remember which one it is. She said in Maine, in a lot of the rural areas, there are no hospitals. And the closest hospital happened to be in Canada.
Oh, God.
A lot of people would go over the border, like sort of like you go over the border to Binghamton, New York, to get certain medical services. They go over Canada, so they have Canadian birth certificates.
So they couldn't. These people are not born in America. They're not American citizens.
Well, they're born, you know, they're born to American citizens, but they were born, they're sort of like Mitt Romney. Remember, he was born in Canada. Who was it was born in the Canal Zone?
Rubio?
John McCain. John McCain was born in the Canal Zone, but they're considered citizens. So, you know, this is the shenanigans that are going on.
But the thing is, you'd never be able to get the documents. And if you got a Canadian document, I could just see somebody in the rural election office saying, well, this isn't any good.
Yeah, well, of course. So, you know, they're all sort. This is just to kind of suppress the vote. But it may have other consequences that are may not totally suppress people that Democrats rely on, but it mostly will. It'll affect poorer people and people of color and inner city people in particular. The other thing I wanted to mention was that, you know, even after Democrats win, they can't win. Down in North Carolina, which had the same kind of problems as Wisconsin in terms of voting for Supreme Court justices, a Democrat won in November by several hundred votes. And the Republican challenger is trying to void the election, saying there were 65,000 votes where the proper ID was not obtained for these votes. And that's an appellate court this week told people who run the elections that they have to be able to verify that the people who voted, that 65,000, have to be able to verify their whatever the requirements were, because they didn't fulfill it properly, and that there's a deadline for them to do it. Now, that's being appealed, but the appellate court, as it's constituted in the Supreme Court in North Carolina, is probably going to go along with that. And they may void out an election of a Democratic Supreme Court justice.
Does it also mean that these 64,000 voters won't be able to vote next time?
Well, I don't know. It might, or they may have to, you know, go through the rigmarole more properly the next time. So we have all these things. There was a rumor, by the way, that in the negotiations in Pennsylvania, the Republicans have been trying like heck to get voter ID through the legislature, and they haven't been able to. They've been trying to do it either by a constitutional convention, or not constitutional amendment, rather, or through the both houses and the governorship. And so far, the Democrats have been able to hold them off because they've either held one house of the legislature or held the governor's office. You know, these things are still up there. And I understand that there's some negotiation that the Democrats may be willing to come up with some sort of voter ID requirement. Of course, the devil's in the details, whether it's just cosmetic or whether it really would affect people. One of the things that Governor Wolf, the Democrat, had agreed 2 years ago in order to get mail-in voting or voting without, you know, where you don't, where you, Pennsylvania used to be restricted. You either had to be out of the state or you were had a doctor's permit that you couldn't go to the polls. That was the only way you could get absentee ballots. And it got expanded. But Wolf had to give up straight party voting, where you could just check off that you're a Democrat or Republican, and all the people on the ballot then were voted for you. That hurts the Democrats in the inner city. That hurts the Democrats in the state because of Philadelphia. People don't. There's an undervote as they go down the ballot. So those things are all there. By the way, I just want to make one more aside. I was kind of surprised in Wisconsin when Susan Crawford gave her victory speech. She was surrounded not at first by family, but by the other Democratic Supreme Court justices, including the one who she's going to be replacing. Given it was a partisan thing, it kind of surprised me, but I was also surprised that the Republican conceded so early. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so this business with ID is something that the Republicans like to use, and they're planning on using it to bounce people off Medicaid and possibly Medicare, because this week, the spokesman for the White House, in response to criticism that the Republicans were trying to remove people from Medicaid, remove people from Medicare, said the president has pledged that everyone who is eligible will be on Medicare, genuinely eligible. In other words, you're going to have to prove it in ways that you don't have to prove it now, in ways that I never had to prove it. And it's all going to be with this paperwork. And the, you know, the boogeyman is going to be, well, we're making sure that illegal aliens don't get on. But I don't think there's any history of illegal aliens getting Medicaid or Medicare.
Yeah, it might happen here or there, but it's not certainly very, very, very limited. But this is the pattern.
Aside from the fact that they should be getting Medicare and Medicaid, because if they don't get Medicaid and they can't afford a doctor, everybody's going to get sick.
Well, the other thing is they get sick, they go to an emergency room, and the emergency rooms have to accommodate them.
That's right, and the emergency rooms get paid by Medicaid.
Yeah. Now, if they don't, then the if they don't get paid, the emergency rooms, what happens is the hospitals have to make up their that money somehow, and they wind up raising the rates for everybody else in order to their charges for other things.
Well, naturally.
Yeah. So, but this is the, you know, the dystopian view of people and the world that the Republicans and Elon Musk are engendering. They talk about fraud. It really doesn't exist, but that's what they, you know, they're saying. And, you know, I think last week we talked about the Secretary of Commerce, Lutnick, who
I call him Nudnik,
yeah, who indicated that anybody who didn't get their Social Security check on time, that they that if they protested, they must be committing fraud. In other words, this is the kind of thinking that they have.
His mother wouldn't complain.
No,
if her check came late, she wouldn't complain.
Right.
Right.
Because her son-in-law is a billionaire.
Up.
Details. Yeah.
It's the way it goes. Well, that brings us, speaking of details, to this poor guy who got arrested in Maryland, shipped out to El Salvador, put in jail, and it turned out Homeland Security said, oh, it was an administrative error. They didn't mean to get him. That's not the guy that they weren't looking for him. That was an error. But they can't bring him back.
Yeah.
They can't bring him back. Why can't they bring him back? Well, he's out of the country. He's no longer in their jurisdiction. Right. Which means that if they made an administrative error and grabbed me or you or anybody and immediately shipped us out, which is what they do, there'd be no way to redress it. There's no court to go to. There's no one to talk to. There's no one to do anything with. You're in jail for the rest of your life. You may think that this affects just this one Venezuelan who happened to be living legally in Maryland, but this is something that menaces everybody, or potentially menaces everybody.
Yeah. Let me talk about that thing, you know, the jurisdiction. Two of the notables that mentioned this were Stephen Miller, who said the courts shouldn't be able to do anything about any of this stuff, and the White House spokeswoman. But the fact of the matter is, you know, they went before the judge, and the judge said, I want this person back by midnight Monday. And it was pointed out that they haven't even tried to get him out. you know, Stephen Miller said, well, have the judge call up the El Salvadorians and see how far he gets. That's not how it works. The judge, I know judge, some judges in the past would have looked down on the poor U.S. attorney who had to try to defend this stuff. And, you know, sort of with his finger, you know, come here, you know, young man or young woman. Let me tell you, I may not have jurisdiction over El Salvador, but I have jurisdiction over you. You know, I have jurisdiction over the U.S. government here when they do something like this. And to tell me you're not even going to try is something else. The question is if they don't do this, is the it's going to be a crisis. And is it going to hold the federal government in contempt, or what can they do?
Even if he held it, supposing he held it in contempt, supposing he holds the Homeland Security Secretary, who's responsible here, Noem, in contempt, who does he send to enforce it? What happens? Nothing happens, right?
No, yeah, I mean, Pam Bondi already said she wasn't going to go after the violators of you know, U.S. The people use Signal.
Yeah, the vice president, the secretary of state, the national security advisor, the director of national intelligence, all of these guys, all of them, right?
Right.
She's not going to enforce anything, and she's not going to enforce it against Noam.
Right.
So it'd be very interesting next week to see what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. This is what happens when you have capture of all of the government resources, and the people in government who take an oath to the Constitution sort of forget that oath the minute they're sworn in. And they may not be the only ones. I mean, we have what these law firms continuing ongoing.
You saw that Doug Emhoff's law firm made a deal with the federal government. Doug Emhoff attacked them for doing it.
Yeah. There were 500 and some law firms across the country did sign an amicus brief opposing what the administration is doing. But a lot of them haven't. And Erwin Chemerinsky, the dean of Berkeley Law School, tried to get the deans of law schools across the country to sign on to something. And of the top 14 or 15 law schools, only three signed on. If the lawyers don't set an example, the ones who litigate, who is going to?
That's right. Everybody says, well, the judges will bail us out. The judges are lawyers. The schools that train them have caved. The law firms have caved. Why would you think the judges won't cave?
Right. I mean, we talked about last week, Mark Elias saying, you know, why would you hire a law firm that won't fight for itself?
Because there are no other law firms.
Yeah.
That's what it'll come down to.
And it's really, really a disturbing thing in my view. I was told that the law firm that I share space with, the Munleys, signed on to they're one of 501 law firms across the country that signed on to oppose what the government's doing, and that makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
yeah. Their father would probably be rolling in his grave if they didn't sign on to that. knowing having practiced with him for 40 years, I knew him pretty well. So
we haven't talked about the tariffs.
Oh yeah.
But I'm not sure we're going to have a lot of time to talk about the tariffs. And in any case, talking about the tariffs next week will be much more fruitful, because we'll have a whole week to see what is happening abroad and what the reaction of the markets are. See what they've been. They've been disastrous for the world. 10.5 points loss in 2 days. A $6 trillion loss in equity in 2 days.
Yeah, making America poorer again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Trump, this is Trump's way of negotiating. and he hopes to divide and conquer, to make individual deals with these individual countries. And then when he makes it with these individual countries, he trumpets them up, even though the deals he makes are probably very, very small in terms of what they really accomplish. But it's just the idea of winning. And then that encourages him. It gives him more stature. This is the strongman stature. And then he uses that to build on the next one. See, I've got two countries. I got four countries. I got 10 countries.
But he can have all the countries. The point is, what good will it do? What does he think it's going to do? Reindustrialization is not going to take place because of tariffs. It doesn't work that way. The loss of jobs didn't occur because of tariffs. It occurred for two reasons. First of all, employers moved to cheap labor places. That's number one. Number two, in automation and computerization eliminated the need for workers.
You know, your Secretary of Commerce, Nudnik, again, has made the statement, we're going to bring these factories back to America, and these factories are going to be using robots.
Yes. So if they come back to America and use robots, what have you done? What's the benefit?
Right.
That's what people should be focusing on. Yeah. The tariffs is a tax on people. And if the excuse for them, of course, there's three different excuses for them, each one of which contradicts the other two. No matter which one you look, you're in a circle jerk there. But the point is, the one thing that can't happen is reindustrialization. And even if you did reindustrialize, at the peak time, 30% of the American workers were working in manufacturing. That's not you're never going to get to that. But if you got to that, you wouldn't save the country.
No. And, and it takes time to build a factory. And companies aren't investing if they're uncertain as to what, the mercurial president is going to do next.
No, that's right. Already, Jaguar announced it was not shipping in. And they're not shipping cars into America.
Right.
They're stopping immediately.
Yeah.
Well, the people who have Land Rovers are not going to have parts to fix their cars. That's what's going to happen.
Yep.
Next week, we'll talk about this, because next week we'll be able to have a comprehensive view.
Yeah, but these are the kind of things that are animating the opposition.
That's right. That's right.
That's what we saw today.
That's right.
Although not a lot of talk about tariffs. There was a lot of talk about other things.
Well, they concentrated on health care. They concentrated on democracy. They concentrated on veterans. That was important. That's all important. But pretty soon, people are going to see their pocketbooks are getting thinner. They're going to be spending a lot of money for what they're not spending a lot of money on right now.
Yeah. So,
anyway, we're done for today.
What this new week brings, and
exactly.
It's exhausting.
It is. But there's hope. These rallies gave people hope. People everywhere that took part in these rallies, you could see, if you looked at television pictures or social media pictures, or you talked to people who were there. We were at one. I talked to people who were two others. I was struck. You were struck by the wonderful spirit, the enthusiasm of the people. And that was exactly what people who were at other rallies in other cities told me. That was the spirit. And that's what we need. That's what people want.
They were together.
Yeah.
Rather than just being divided into their individual.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week. Same time, same place.